We're broadcasting from the Middle Tennessee Electric Studios.
Visit MTE.com.
Middle Tennessee Electric.
Serving to make life better.
Since 1930.
Since 1936.
This is WGNS Action Line. Action Line. Talking with Rutherford County newsmakers for 78 years.
Since 1947.
This is WGNS Action Line. Now your host, Scott Walker.
Today in studio we have guest from Murfreesboro Medical Clinic, Dr. Savanye Singh in endocrinology at MMC, and also Jamie Gilliland. Starting off this morning with Dr. Savanye Singh, tell us a little bit about what you do each day.
Endocrinology, essentially, we are hormone doctors, so a lot of what we do is helping our patients manage their hormones. Biggest things really are diabetes, sort of our bread and butter. We're the go-to place, like I said, for all your hormonal needs.
Jamie Gilliland is also with us, and you work out of her office, right?
Yes, sir.
You would be the voice we hear when we call and ask questions.
Well, my wonderful receptionist would be, but yes, we are. We are the voices they hear when they call.
So in endocrinology, are you seeing more and more cases of diabetes?
I don't know if it's more and more. I think as people around the community just become more aware of it, we're having more people come in and ask for help. I think a lot of times people try to handle things on their own, or they're unaware of all the different treatment methods that are available to you. You know, you see things on the news, you see medication advertisements, but you don't really, you know, you're not able to put two and two together. But I think now there's just a lot more awareness. So we're seeing people come in for help more than we have before, for sure.
I know over the past year, it seems like we've heard more news stories about tick-borne illnesses and how they can lead to a number of issues. Now, are some of those issues tied to endocrinology?
I suspect they can be. I haven't particularly seen a connection between the two rise recently. So I can't completely comment on that. Primary care would probably know more than that. We usually see them after they've gotten these diagnoses to kind of help tailor their treatment plan.
I guess I was thinking more like Lyme disease, things like that.
Certainly common, you know, in these areas, but I personally haven't seen a direct link between the two just yet.
What are some of the other more common things that you do see each day?
Like I said, diabetes is sort of the bread and butter, both type 1, type 2. More recently, we're seeing, especially in endocrinology, things like PCOS. That's another really big one that we help out with. Thyroid issues, whether that's hypothyroidism, hyperthyroidism, thyroid nodules, occasionally thyroid cancer. It's probably the majority of what we see. I like to tell my patients that when they go to their doctor for other things, you know, oftentimes you get scanned for all sorts of things. And a lot of what I treat are things that are found incidentally. You had no idea you had it until you were getting worked up for something else and you stumbled upon this new thing. And now you're sitting in my office getting a whole nother workup.
With items like the thyroid, when you focus on the thyroid, what types are there symptoms that people normally do have when they come to you about the thyroid? Or like you said, is that found by some other measure that you have something else going on and leads to that?
Yeah, well, the thyroid sort of plays a role in a lot of things. I call it a very meddlesome gland. You know, if it's overactive, you have a ton of symptoms. If it's underactive, you've got a ton of symptoms. And I like to think about an underactive thyroid as your whole body just slowing down. So slower heart rate, slower gut motility, depressed mood, putting on weight, fatigued. And on the other hand, an overactive thyroid ramps everything up. So fast heart rate, losing weight inappropriately, feeling hot all the time, feeling more anxious, shaky. As I'm saying all these things, you probably think, oh, well, if I drink a lot of caffeine, I'll feel shaky or my heart's going to beat really fast. So we call a lot of these non-specific symptoms. But because the thyroid presents in so many different ways, I feel like it's probably the gland that's checked most often to see whether it's working or not whenever people come in to see their primary care. And I think if you feel like something is off and something's not right, it's always worth investigating to make sure that your thyroid isn't causing it. And if it is, great, now we've found something to help fix to make you feel better. And if it's not, then you know to keep looking for a different answer.
For a lot of these problems that people may have, is the answer often just a medication? Is it as simple as that? Or do you often find that they're going to need a whole lot more than just, you know, medication to fix this issue?
Usually it's medication, and a lot of it can also be lifestyle. You know, a lot of things, your whole body is a little more inflamed, there's things that you can do in your daily lifestyle, like being more active, trying to eat cleaner, cutting out all these extra additives in your food, taking a daily multivitamin. Simple things like that can help reduce inflammation in the body, can help make a lot of these things better. Not to say that that's going to take you all the way. You certainly might need medication whenever there's a true hormonal problem, whether it's an excess hormone or too little of the hormone. Usually it does require medication to get you 100% better. But there's certainly a lot of things you can do in your day-to-day life in order to get you at least partway there to feeling like your normal self again.
Here in Rutherford County, what is the average patient who comes to you? Are they male or female?
Certainly more females than males. Not to say that males don't suffer from the same things, but I mean, I don't know about you, but I know my dad, I know my husband, and they certainly are a little more on the stubborn end and won't get looked at when they've got something going on. So I don't know if that's a reflection of just them being healthier or just not getting checked up.
And when you talk about hormones, you know, we hear more and more about, well, we hear about men with low testosterone, then we hear about females that may be going into menopause or something along those lines. Are you seeing a lot of that too?
Absolutely. Definitely a whole lot of that going on. I think there's just a lot more awareness about all of that. I think low testosterone in men, that's always been something that's been out there. People are aware. We can certainly treat that. Primary care treats it. Urology treats it. But more recently, there's been a lot more education and people are just more aware of, on the female side, menopausal symptoms and even perimenopause. So that's certainly, we've seen a lot more of that recently as people are becoming more aware of what to look for and know that there's something out there to help them if they're experiencing symptoms.
Are the ages of patients who are going through some type of hormone-related problem, are they getting younger?
I don't think I've seen any trend in any sort of way in terms of age. You know, patients I see typically are spread across the board.
You may hear ads that are targeting younger people, but in reality, maybe there's just no real change there. It's just they're being either diagnosed, you know, at a quicker stage or something along those lines.
Sure. I think that's an accurate way to put that.
With hormones, what are some of the symptoms that a man or a woman could be going through that makes them think, you know, maybe I should get this checked out?
It's really hard to say because there's so many different hormones out there and they're all in charge of different things in your body. So I don't think there's a one size fit all. You know, it's not like, well, if you feel this symptom, that means there might be a hormonal issue. So I usually tell my patients, you know what your body feels like, you know what your normal is. So if something feels really off compared to your normal, it's always worth investigating. Again, I caution all of that by saying doesn't always mean that there's a problem or a hormonal issue. It's certainly worth investigating and ruling out, but there's so many things that can cause us to feel off of our normal. You know, you have a stressful job or you're traveling a lot, and especially the holidays, a lot of stress comes with that. So many different things can make us feel off from our baseline. But if you feel like something's going on that's different and it's persistent, then definitely worth investigating and making sure it's not a hormonal issue that's causing it.
Stress and a lack of sleep, those two things combined cause so many issues in so many different areas of your life. I mean, it can impact a lot within your body, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Stress just puts your entire body in a more inflammatory state than if you are not stressed. Now, I guess it's hard to say, well, you know, just don't be stressed, because how do you do that?
Yeah.
You know, things in life keep going on and you just have to find ways, I guess, that help you kind of manage that stress to make you not feel as anxious as before, whether that's, you're just taking a few minutes to take a few deep breaths to calm down, or, you know, yoga, mindfulness, meditation, so many different avenues that people can try in order to handle their stress in better ways, because you can't necessarily remove the stress. It's just how you're dealing with it.
So with the hormone issue, if somebody is having hormone related problems, is the answer to that for you to help solve the problem or help fix whatever the issue is going on? Is it an injection? Is it a pill they take? How do you get to the bottom of it first? And then how do you figure out the treatment plan?
Well, typically when someone comes to me, first thing we do is, what's going on? What is it that feels different? What has been done for you so far? Tell me, like, 6 months ago, were you feeling this way? A year ago, were you feeling this way? And just try to get some backstory to everything. And that kind of helps me think about, well, what might be wrong? You know, sometimes people come to me and they've already had some sort of workup from their primary care, and then I'm just picking up from there and just doing the more detailed specific testing. But yeah, essentially getting more history from them to kind of help guide what I might want to do next then usually entails some most likely blood work, occasionally some imaging, and then based on what that shows, if we do find something is abnormal, like I said, a hormone in excess or a deficient hormone, then we will try to tailor our treatment to that. And whether it's a pill or an injection sort of depends. Like testosterone, for example, comes in an injection form, whether that's intramuscular, subcutaneous, patch, gel. So the medicine itself always comes in different formulations. The exact way to treat it would be kind of based on what it is we're treating.
Dr. Savanye Singh, and with endocrinology, do you see a lot of patients who they've gone to their primary care doctor, they've gone to maybe even some other specialists, but they just can't figure out exactly why they're feeling the way they do. And then they come to you and then all of a sudden it's like a light bulb goes off and you figure it out.
Sometimes yes and sometimes no. Like I said, it's a lot of symptoms when it comes to hormones are what we call non-specific symptoms. So they can be due to an actual medical condition. And that's what my job is to kind of help figure out. And sometimes it's just things going on in life that are adding extra stress to you. And it may not be a medical thing. It might just be your life, everyday life, that's causing you to feel some sort of way. And so, like I said, that's my job to figure out. It's sometimes, yeah, patients are feeling off and they continue to see their primary care doctors or, you know, think that this is just normal. And then they come to see me at some point and we figure out that, no, this is not normal. We've actually found something we can pinpoint that's causing you to feel not right, not like yourself. And it's always great when that happens because now we found something that we can fix and patients do feel better, like a very significant before and after feeling. That's what I'd like to do for every patient, but unfortunately, sometimes it's not always something medical and you're sort of back to the drawing board at that point.
With things like using hormones as an example, if that's the problem and then you get them on the proper medication to bring whatever hormone level up, how big of a difference do some patients tell you they feel after getting the proper treatment?
It's usually life-changing. You mentioned low testosterone. So if someone truly has low testosterone and you start treating that with something in order to raise the testosterone levels, complete like night versus day type of difference.
Is a lot of that genetic? I mean, if you're going to get that diagnosis, is a lot of it genetic?
Not always. It certainly can be. There are certain hormonal conditions that there are genetic predispositions to, especially if things run in the family, but not always.
And then going back to diabetes, I know obesity is a huge concern for Americans everywhere across the country. But now they've got things like injections that you can take that will help curb your appetite and then help you to lose weight. And what all does that entail?
Yeah, so I think you're probably referring to medicines that are called GLP-1 receptor agonists. So typically they are injectable. There is one version that is oral, but yeah, they're essentially from the time that food goes in on one end and comes out the other. It's slowing down the entire gut motility. But the benefit of that is, you know, all those carbs and sugars are being absorbed more slowly and insulin is being released slower. And so you're getting the benefit from the diabetes. You're getting some of the weight loss benefits from that. They also work on kind of that noise in the brain that says, hey, I just want to munch on something, even if you're not really hungry. And these medicines kind of help quiet that noise. So there's a lot of benefits to diabetes and weight loss from these medicines. They also have heart protection, kidney protection. So great medicines. But the side effects of these medicines is also that it can cause nausea, vomiting, constipation because of how the medicine works. So do they work? Absolutely. But are they for everyone? No. So I think that's when you really have to sit down with your provider, whether that's your primary care or your endocrinologist, and see whether that particular medicine's a right fit for you.
And with those side effects, do some of those wear off or, you know, kind of fade away after the first couple of weeks that you're on the medicine?
They can. I usually tell my patients, you know, let's just go slow and steady. All those particular types of medicines, they are what we call titration medicine. So they start at a low dose and you can work your way up. So, I mean, I always go nice and slow with it. I don't ever try to rush the patient's body. If we go nice and slow, that's usually when you yield better effects with these medicines. So that's personally how I like to practice.
Now, once you start that path, do you have to stay on those medications for forever, those injections?
Yes and no. So whenever we're talking about, like if you're on these medicines for diabetes or you're on these medicines for obesity, both of these are medical conditions. You know, it's this medical condition, it might be controlled at a point, but it doesn't ever really go away. You know, if you have a history of diabetes, let's say you're doing really great and you get your A1C down and your sugars look great, it might be in remission. You might have it controlled, but you're always going to have that history of having diabetes. Same thing with obesity. You know, it's, these are all medical conditions. So let's say you have high blood pressure. You're going to have high blood pressure your whole life. You know, you might have it better controlled at a point. So I like my patients to kind of rework how they think about it. It's not like you're getting to a goal and all of a sudden these problems that you have that you're treating with this medicine are going away. So it can be used lifelong, and a lot of people do use it lifelong because these conditions are lifelong conditions. Now, if someone's goal is to come off the medicine at some point, absolutely. I'm all for helping you try to be on as few medicines as possible. But that also, especially with these medicines, it requires a lot of lifestyle changes too. You want to make sure you're staying active, making sure you're strength training, keeping your muscle moving and active, and really making a lot of dietary changes too. And certainly it's possible to come off these medicines and, you know, maintain all the progress that you've made. But I don't think that should always be the goal.
Again, Dr. Savanye Singh from Murfreesboro Medical Clinic. What office do you practice out of?
The Garrison Drive location for Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
What made you want to go into this field, endocrinology?
You know, to me, primary care was what I initially thought I was interested in, you know, really finding diseases that you could treat and the outpatient side prevent patients from ending up in the hospital. But when I started doing more primary care, it was a little overwhelming. There's just a lot that's there. And I thought that if I could pick a few things to focus on and really specialize in, then I could help my patients better that way. And that's what led me to endocrinology. A lot of it is primary care things, but looking at them from a more specialized standpoint.
When a patient does come to you and they meet you for the first time and they say, you know, my doctor said that I've got this, this, and this going on, whatever it may be, are they usually scared of what you're going to say, or are they worried about, seems like surgery is the number one fear.
Yeah.
Is that usually their fear when they come to you, or are they already reassured, you know, surgery is probably not going to happen in this case. It's probably going to be something like a medication they give you.
I think usually worry is the first thing I see on my patients' faces. You know, you hear that you have to go see a specialist for something and immediately panic sets in.
Yeah.
So when they come to me, I feel like my job is first to explain everything, break it down to the basics, explain what's really going on with their body and what all their options are, and try to make them feel more comfortable, dissuade some of the fears, and help them understand what's going on. Because a lot of it, the fear stems from just not understanding completely what the issue is that's going on with you and feeling like something's wrong in your body. But if you can understand that better and feel more educated when you're walking back out the door in my office, then I feel like that was a job well done.
I know I've asked other doctors this, but do you have a lot of patients who turn to Google first and they come in with this long laundry list of issues and things they think they may have?
Absolutely. All the Google doctors, the ChatGPT doctors, it's rampant. And I've done it myself too, you know, like I'm an endocrinologist, so that part I feel comfortable with. But I remember when I was pregnant with my kiddos, I mean, I'd Google all the things and work myself up into a panic. So I think it's natural to do that. But again, I like to put everything into perspective, because when my patients go on Google, they see all these words that they don't really know how to fully understand. They just have part of the picture. And so I try to connect the dots and help them understand what they've read on Google. So if they do go back on Google, they're going in more educated and can understand what they see better.
I don't know why, but Google and probably ChatGPT too, it automatically goes to, it seems like, worst case scenario when you're looking up symptoms.
Well, I think, I don't know how these algorithms work, but I suspect that it probably does that because it never wants to give advice and miss the bad things. You never want to miss the really big, scary thing. So it always says, well, be mindful of this, this, and this. And it's human nature to look at that worst case scenario and be like, oh, that's me. Like, world is ending.
When a patient is told you're showing signs of being pre-diabetic, are there enough things that person can do to change that direction fairly easily and then kind of start over with their health?
I don't know about easily. I think it makes a lot of, like, making mindful decisions. You know, the American Diabetes Association, a lot of what they write about is, like, for example, eating, like mindless eating versus mindful eating. You know, like if you're munching on things when you're not really hungry, that's mindless eating. But looking at what you've got around you and really thinking about, am I hungry in this point? Is this something I really want or need? And making mindful decisions about food. I think similarly, if you're diagnosed with pre-diabetes, I think you have to make a lot of mindful decisions in order to either keep it there or move back out of the pre-diabetes range and not develop full-blown diabetes. And The main things in that is going to be, again, taking a look at your diet, making sure you're not mindlessly eating things that aren't good for you. Processed sugars, things with a lot of additives in them, high carb foods, making sure you're being active. Activity is so important. Even taking a short 10-minute walk after your meals can do wonders for your body. Granted, that's not always possible. Some people can't physically walk. Okay, well, you know, you can do chair exercises. There's tons of videos on YouTube about ways to stay active if you can't go outside and walk. And now it's really cold outside. So, you know, maybe get yourself a nice coat or again, you know, do things at home. For families that have kids and you can't leave your kiddos to go for a walk. Well, again, there's videos on YouTube for family fun movement. Put that on and get your kids involved to jump around the living room. And, you know, activity's activity. It's just getting your body moving. So small changes like that can certainly help move you from a pre-diabetic range back into a normal A1C range and certainly not develop diabetes.
In this day and age, people are in a hurry all the time. They want to get things done right away. They want, if they make a purchase, they want that to be delivered to their door right away. I mean, it's really in every category of life today. That being said, is it hard to get people to kind of slow down and understand these are the changes that you're going to have to make and this is the medicine maybe that you're going to have to take and remember to take every day?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're just in a world of quick fixes. A lot of things with your health are not quick fixes. It's really making conscious decisions about your body and putting in the time and effort in order to get things under control. But that's a big mindset change for people to make.
And once people do start to get things under control, like you were talking about the hormone changes, you know, if it is something as simple as giving an injection or taking a medication, and you were talking about how it can literally change a life when they start to feel better. Is that also true with changing the habits of eating and sleeping and even trying to reduce your stress?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think if you were to sleep 4 hours every night and then you go to sleeping, you know, 7 hours every night, you're going to feel a whole lot better when you are giving your body the rest it needs. And so, again, it's just making these mindful choices as best you can, given your circumstances, to fuel your body in a healthy way and give it the rest it needs.
It's wild how something that sounds as simple as getting more hours of sleep each night can literally change the way you feel that much each day.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm not a sleep doctor by any means, but, you know, there's a lot of studies that show, especially when it comes to your hormones, having good sleep-wake patterns can make these hormones a little bit more steady.
During the period of COVID, it seemed like a lot of numbers went up for patients who have depression or anxiety. In fact, for the first time, we started seeing larger numbers of children having anxiety during that COVID period. What did we learn from that time period that you're still looking at today or utilizing today in some way?
That's a good question. You know, I think what COVID showed us is being in isolation wasn't good for us. You know, having to stay home and not moving and not being active isn't good for us. And so things to do now, again, like I said, get outside, be more active, trying to be away from the screens all the time and just go back to how we maybe were 15, 20 years ago with technology not being such a big part of our lives when things weren't always a quick fix. I think during the time of COVID and how much life changes when we couldn't go out and do all those things showed us that it had very significant impact on our body. So being able to go to a time where we're less glued to the things inside our house and being able to go out and explore more really makes a big difference.
How detrimental is it to a person when they don't have outside connections with friends or family or even relationships that are positive in the office where they go out to eat after work or something? But how detrimental is it on a person when they don't have any type of outside relationship?
So it's probably a little bit out of my wheelhouse. So this is me just speculating at this point, but I feel like a person's mental health really is dependent on the connections that they have and the relationships that they have. So I'm sure it plays a huge role in all of that, being able to have that connection, have someone check on you and get you out of the house and be more social. Have a circle that's bigger than just you.
And I guess mental health can start to show itself in some of the problems that you treat. I mean, like the hormone issues or I don't know. I mean, any number of them really, but I can see where hormone especially can change the way I guess you think or feel in a lot of ways mentally.
Yeah, certainly hormones can play a role in your mood, energy level. And so the main complaint that people have when they come to me can be feeling really fatigued or depressed mood. And I always, you know, like I said, it's worth investigating to see whether it is a hormonal issue that's causing those symptoms.
Again, Dr. Savanye Singh from Murfreesboro Medical Clinic. We got to take a short break and then we will be right back. If you have any questions, you can text those in at 615-893-1450.
This is Peter Demas at Demas's Restaurant. Demas has offered gift cards that you can get in any value. You know, those times where someone gives you gifts you weren't really prepared. It's one of those things that's nice and easy to hand back out, but they're amazing gifts for teachers, for family and friends. And we always offer specials depending on how many gift cards that you get as well. You can go straight down to the restaurant, and our cashiers are happy to help you with any of those gift cards. Demas's Restaurant, 1115 Northwest Broad Street in Murfreesboro.
Hi, this is Amanda from Animal City, inviting you to come do business with our family. While you're Christmas shopping, Santa is on his way to Animal City. Stop in for pet photos on the 13th and 14th of December. Check our Facebook page for more details and times. Stop in to Animal City with your pets to take some great photos with Santa. That's Saturday the 13th and Sunday the 14th of December. Check our Facebook page for more details and times. Animal City, 919 Northwest Broad Street in Murfreesboro.
Hi, I'm Larry Castelli, and I love living at Adams Place. I do exercise. I go 3 times a week. I go to stretch and balance, always conscious of your needs. It's not that someone is telling you what to do. Is they're looking out for you. It's a good workout.
And what about the food?
Oh, give me a break. There's so much food here. You know, I would highly recommend Adams Place.
Get old. Old National Bank, that is. Old National Bank has the experience and service you need to buy a home, make investments, even online and mobile banking.
Old National Bank, Equal Housing Lender, member FDIC.
Local farmers, local meats, vegetables, and other produce at the Winter Spring Rutherford County Farmers Market.
Bundle up and make your way every Friday at Lane Agri Park.
FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com. This is a WGNS Action Line. Now, your host, Scott Walker.
Our guest in studio, Dr. Savanye Singh in endocrinology at MMC, and also Jamie Gilliland. During that break, Jamie, you were talking about all the patients who have diabetes and some of the issues they face.
The majority of the referrals we're getting right now are diabetic patients who are seeing their primary care doctors and trying to be treated with them. And our goal is to help them get their A1Cs down, to help them have a more active lifestyle, to be able to feel like if they are in the obesity category, helping them maybe get out of that, or if they're type 1s, helping them get on the right pump or the right continuous glucose monitor and managing their medications. We just want them to have overall health with that.
And diabetes, that's not something that somebody's going to say, I've got diabetes and this is my problem. They literally need to come to the doctor in order to get that type of diagnosis. I mean, it's not something you just think, hey, this is probably what I have, and then bam, that's it.
I think people who have family members that have diabetes, when they at some point become diabetic, they can recognize the symptoms. But yeah, a lot of times, especially our type 1 diabetes patients, they only know that they have this diagnosis when they've ended up in the hospital, usually. The sugars get really bad. They feel really sick. They end up in the hospital, have sugars that are crazy high. Someone at the hospital does the workup and they say, well, now you have diabetes. And they end up here at my doorstep feeling confused, scared. And then our job is to reassure them that this is a very treatable disease, whether it's type 1 or type 2, and just help them get on the right path, get on the right medications to get control of everything.
If you do have diabetes, how often are you checking blood sugar level?
Depends what type of diabetes you have and what type of medicine you're on. So if you're on insulin, you have to check your blood sugars. Insulin is one of those things that has a high risk of low blood sugars if it's taken inappropriately. So those types of patients, if they're trying to stick their own finger, I say at least check once a day. The best time to check would be that fasting blood sugar first thing in the morning when you wake up. But the nice thing is nowadays with all the technologies that we have these continuous glucose monitors. Things like your Freestyle, Dexcom, Eversense, all these continuous glucose monitors that are checking your sugar all day long. And you can hook them up to your phone and check your sugar and not worry about having to prick your finger. So anyone on insulin, that's usually my goal, to try to get them on one of these devices. It gives them more information, it gives us more information, and really helps us tailor their treatment plan. Just kind of tune it up a little bit more by having all this information to use.
One of the texts we got a second ago was talking about how they would often feel shaky or tired all of a sudden, and then if they ate something, whenever they got that feeling, it almost instantly made them feel better. What could something like that be?
Sounds like low blood sugar. You know, low blood sugar can present with shakiness, irritability, breaking out in sweats, sometimes loss of consciousness. Hopefully you're not passing out and you catch it before then, but certainly could cause a lot of symptoms. And it's a good thing that you're feeling those, though, because it means that your body is telling you, hey, the sugar's dropping low. The concern is always if you're having too many of those types of episodes, your body starts to lose the ability to tell. And that's always worrisome. So I tell my patients, well, it's a good thing you feel sick when your sugar's low, because that's your body telling you, hey, do something to fix it.
Is that a telltale sign of diabetes? Is it a sign of something else? What is that usually a sign of?
Well, it's not always a telltale sign of diabetes. I think if any of us go for a long time without eating, we're going to start to feel shaky and sick. It's just your body needs sugar to go on. You know, your liver produces some sugar on its own, but that's not always enough to keep you going. So I think to feel a little shaky and irritable when you're hungry or with your sugar dropping low, that can happen to anyone. It's concerning when you're on medicines that also lower your blood sugar. And that's why, you know, for anyone that's on insulin specifically, or anyone who's diabetic on medicines, I think those symptoms are more concerning. But for someone that doesn't have a diagnosis of diabetes, I wouldn't say that that's a telltale sign. I would certainly say, I think it's time to go see your primary care and have them do a workup and screen you to make sure that you don't have diabetes.
And then another question we had, and for this one, I have to actually look at what the question was again, but is asking, because I've not heard of this. It says, Dr. Singh, what is your opinion on bioidentical hormone therapy? Am I even saying? I don't even know what bioidentical hormone therapy is.
In all honesty, I don't know a ton about it. I think that's something that I'll have to go read up on, and I'm happy to see someone in clinic and we can kind of go through all of that together.
I've never even seen that word before.
Since we were talking about diabetes before, for someone who has not been diagnosed with diabetes, something when they come to me and they say, well, I was feeling this, this, and this, it's usually drinking a ton of water, going to the bathroom really often, feeling hungry all the time, losing weight when you're not really doing anything to lose weight. Those are a lot of, when you talk about telltale signs, those are definitely telltale signs that you should be screened for diabetes, because uncontrolled diabetes can certainly present that way when it's not being treated. So specifically with the diabetes population, that's a story I hear very, very often. You know, I was feeling all of this. I ended up going to my doctor, going to an urgent care or emergency room, and then now I've got this new diagnosis.
It looks like they were talking about hormone replacement therapy, BHRT, hormone replacement therapy. I guess that's a certain type of therapy, and I guess there's lots of new stuff out there. I'm not sure.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of new things out there. You know, with hormone replacement therapy, now if it's, you know, hormone replacement for males, we're specifically talking testosterone. You know, testosterone therapy, if someone truly has low testosterone, usually the conversation that I have next is whether or not fertility is still something that's in the picture. So treating low testosterone with testosterone is not always the answer, and I think that that is certainly education that's not freely out there. Someone who's still interested in fertility should not be on testosterone. There's other ways to raise testosterone levels. Now, if we're talking about women, hormone replacement therapy typically comes into play when they're perimenopausal and definitely postmenopause. And certainly different, you know, estrogen, progesterone treatment options are available by different formulations in order to help with these perimenopausal and menopausal symptoms for women.
Another question that we got asked a little while ago, it said their doctor recommended a hysterectomy and they're feeling all these different signs or problems, and they believe it's their hormones and hormone related. But I guess they were asking, after that operation is done, that procedure is done, will that person have to be on some type of hormone therapy the rest of their life?
It sort of depends on why they're getting the hysterectomy. And I think that's, you know, how invasive the surgery is going to be, whether or not the ovaries are left or not. And so that's probably a good conversation to have with your OBGYN, since they'd be the ones doing the surgery. It really would be dependent on the extent of surgery that you're having. Some people may need some kind of hormone therapy and some don't.
In your field, your focus, are you often working with a lot of other doctors as well?
Absolutely. That's why it's nice to work at a place like MMC, because it really is multi-specialty. I certainly work with OBGYN a lot. Like I said, when it comes to perimenopause, menopause, PCOS, OBGYN can often treat it. We often treat it, or we work together in order to treat these patients. Same thing in pregnancy. A lot of new hormonal issues can come up. I see a lot of my gestational diabetes is big. Thyroid problems can present when someone is pregnant. And so a lot of times working with OBGYNs is That's very, very common. And then obviously primary care is where we get the majority of our referrals. And then, you know, when it comes to our diabetics, we often refer them to podiatry to get their foot exams, ophthalmology for their eye exams. So we certainly work very closely with various other providers in order to provide truly like multi-specialty care, well-rounded care for our patients.
Again, Dr. Singh with us today from Murfreesboro Medical Clinic, and also Jamie Gilliland from MMC. And if anybody listening has more questions, if they'd like to set an appointment, do they need a referral? Can they just call MMC?
We do ask that they have records sent to our office. That way we can make sure that we review them and make sure that it is actually something that endocrinology would be the right fit for them. So whether that's their primary care doctor or another referring doctor, they can send records into us. And then the patient, if they know that their doctor is sending records into us, we always encourage them, hey, about 3 days after your physician sends records to us, give us a call. Our phone number is 615-867-8130. And we're happy to see if we got those records and try to get you scheduled. Dr. Singh does have availability, and she's taking most all insurances at this time.
I guess the bottom line, if you're feeling anything that you probably know is not normal, you should probably set an appointment and figure out what's going on.
Yes, sir. Yeah. We encourage, a lot of times when the patients call us and they kind of tell us some of their symptoms, but they haven't seen anybody yet, we always encourage them, hey, contact your primary care doctor, like what Dr. Singh was saying, to kind of have a workup. And if you don't have a primary care doctor, we encourage you to either try to get a primary care doctor, or some of the urgent care or nurse practitioner groups in town will see patients without them having an established primary care. That way, somebody can provide some sort of workup for them to make sure that if they're coming to us, that we're the right place for them.
We are already out of time, but we appreciate y'all joining us today. And our guests have been in studio, Dr. Savanye Singh in endocrinology at MMC, and also Jamie Gilliland, both with Murfreesboro Medical Clinic. You can learn more online by visiting mmclinic.com.